Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Hump Day J6 Hearing Eve Edition. And I got to find Fancy Brian. You're always right here with me, or at least technically in the Shaw. I got Evan with me here in the world headquarters, Madison, Wisconsin, Devil Radio. He'll be lightly screening your calls all day long at 844-967-2789. And I got to find Co-Devil right from the top. He is John Nichols from the Nation, from, you know, I'd like to think, friend of the devil. Welcome back, John.
I am a friend, and I am glad to be welcome back. Good to be with you, brother.
John, how do you anticipate watching the big hearing tomorrow night, or will you be listening to it right here on the radio?
I'd love to be listening to it on the radio. I'm doing commentary on it for a couple of different outlets, for Pacifica Radio and then for Al Jazeera internationally. And so I'll be watching it on, you know, screens and then be in front of computers for Skype hookups and stuff like that.
So, John, what are you expecting? I hate to have too high expectations, you know, but I'm looking for a summer blockbuster to rival Maverick.
Damn straight. That's exactly what you should be looking for. And to some extent, in the reporting I've done on preparation for it, that sounds a little bit like what it's going to be. It appears that the committee majority has brought in technical people because they're going to have a lot of production with this lengthy hearing on Thursday night. And that production will be aimed at creating a narrative so that people who are watching it can say, oh, okay, I get, you know, much more what's going on here. I have a much better perspective. And that narrative is apparently going to be aiming toward sort of a new language as regards what happened on January 6th, 2021. To not talk about it so much as an insurrection, which is a good word, frankly, a pretty powerful word, but not a precise word, and more beginning to talk about it as a coup. And as a coup that was the result of a conspiracy at the center of which was Donald Trump. And if indeed that is the narrative that's developed, especially on the first night, and then they build around it going forward with a lot of evidence, I think these could be pretty powerful hearings.
John, coup-spiracy. You can use that, sir.
Thank you. I'll see where I can take that.
You know, I like to make up words around here. He is John Nichols. You know, he stays a little closer to the dictionary. But John, I get the difference because, you know, when we first saw the January 6, 2021, when we saw it happen in real time, I mean, we thought maybe Trump incited this riot, but we had no idea all the stuff that was going on behind the scenes. And John, at first I thought this was a very straightforward case. You know, Trump went out there and he riled the troops and he sent them off for the attack. But this was a multi-pronged, multi-leveled. I mean, they were playing four-level chess conspiracy here, if you will, John. This was a very complicated scheme and it was on multiple levels. And it does seem like Trump was at the center of the scheme, John. But how do you prove all that in a two-hour made for ADHD Americans?
Well, first and foremost, you don't do it all in that first 2 hours. You get your broad themes and you put them on the table so that people know where you're headed. And that's like any good of any book, any movie, whatever, so that you've got a little bit of anticipation going. And then you begin to draw out your narrative to tell people you know, the story as it developed. And so you don't have to do everything all at once. But what you do have to do, what you do have to do is communicate the drama of what we're talking about here. Now, that's very hard to do if you have every member of Congress give a speech, right? Every member on the committee give a speech. And that's the great danger of this circumstance, right? You don't want to have a situation where it's like 20 speeches, you know, all talking about how great they are. You want to get to the heart of the matter. You want to get to the storyline quickly and effectively. And I think it's summed up in a statement that Jamie Raskin, the key progressive on the committee, made late last week when he was up in New England giving some speeches. He was asked, you know, how seriously do you think Trump was involved in this? And he said, I believe, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, I believe that Trump went to bed on the night of January 5th, 2021, believing that events that would transpire during the course of the next day would assure that.
Oh, no, John Nichols. John, let me slow you down for just a second, my friend, because you got to the punchline and we missed it. Trump just laying down in his bed, you know, the Ritalin just starting to wear off, John. And what happened then?
Then Trump went to bed convinced that events that would transpire the next day on January 6th, 2021 would overturn the results of the 2020 election and lead to a circumstance where he would continue his presidency through a second term. That Trump was so actively involved and so engaged with this conspiracy that he knew what was going to transpire the next day. Not every aspect, but he knew that there would, in fact, be immense pressure brought on the Congress through a storming of the Capitol, and that the point of this would be to overturn the results, the legitimate results of the election, and install him, assure that he would be able to continue as an illegitimate president. That's pretty dramatic stuff. That's suggesting something far deeper than what came out in the impeachment trial, something far deeper than frankly anything we've had up to this point. That is evidence that Donald Trump was an overseer of a conspiracy, an active participant in multiple aspects of a conspiracy that was directed toward a specific shift in reality, i.e. the overturning of an election. If that, what Raskin was talking about, if that is brought out and if that evidence is presented, that is going to blow the roof off everything, right? And is that going to make Ron Johnson change his opinion? No, because you couldn't make Ron Johnson change his opinion, you know, with anything but money. But it has the great potential to have a real impact on that great mass of Americans that doesn't follow politics on a day-to-day basis, that isn't deeply involved in the nuances of, you know, Democratic and Republican positioning, that didn't read the Mueller report or anything like that. These are folks who get their political news from, you know, radio, a quick radio rundown of headlines, but may occasionally tune into something that they think is a really big deal. And obviously that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the potentials that a substantial portion of Americans, certainly not the great mass of everybody, but a substantial portion of Americans might finally conclude that Donald Trump did indeed conspire to thwart U.S. democracy. And if that happens, that moves the needle. It doesn't move it all the way. You're still going to have Trump, you know, rabid Trump defenders, and you're also going to have rabid Trump haters. Well, you're going to have a portion of people who are somewhat in the middle who move toward, we just can't let Trump have power again.
Well, John, let me point one thing out. They're not going to broadcast the January 6th hearings on Fox News. And that's obviously the number one cable news. And in fact, if anything, they're going to propagandize and they're going to counter program. They're going to spin. They're going to roll out these glossy videos making, you know, these poor Trumpsters. They're being vilified. They're being persecuted. John, how do we overcome? And I'm literally going on Fox News this Sunday, and I don't care what they ask me about. I'm talking about January 6th. But, John, how do we overcome the lack of coverage from the right? If they're going to pretend like it didn't happen, John, aren't their audiences not going to know what happened?
Yep. It's just going to be the case. You know, that is a fundamental reality, that there are going to be some folks who are not going to tune in to the storyline, and who wouldn't, even if you gave them all the evidence, accept the storyline, right? That's, you know, a practical reality of American politics and of American media life. And you aren't going to change that, no matter how desperately you might want to. Now, you may, perhaps you personally will change it on Sunday. And, you know, that'll...
Yeah, it'll be me, John. I feel quite confident.
It'll be the pivot point for American politics. History books will be written about it. But on the chance that isn't the case, that's not what we're really talking about. Because you're right, Fox is the most watched cable news program. But what percentage of the American people watch it?
It's relatively small. It's 5 million people a night, something like that.
Yeah, John? So at its peak, you're talking about 1.5, maybe 2% of the American people, right? So basically, I'm working on the other 98%.
John,
you know, I mean,
will it help to have Liz Cheney? I understand Liz Cheney will be a big part of the first night. We're probably about a minute and a half to break here, John. But Liz Cheney, your thoughts on her on the lead?
Yeah, you got to give her a platform. She is the Republican who's there, and the notion, any notion whatsoever, that this is a bipartisan committee, has to give her and Adam Kinzinger some position in which to raise issues and to talk about them. And frankly, I think she and Kinzinger are pretty reliable on their critique of Trump and on their critique of Trump's wrongdoing and that of those who are around him. So I think in that case, that's fine and probably be pretty effective. I'm just hoping that they also have Jamie Raskin out front, because Raskin, of course, the great constitutional scholar, is really brilliant at putting these pieces together as well.
John Nichols, hold that thought. Come back with me. One more segment with John Nichols from The Nation. He's Code Devlin to start this big Wednesday, the Hump Day J6 Hearing Eve Edition. More with John Nichols and yours truly, and Fancy Brian and Evan.
I know you gotta be frustrated. I can taste it.
I want somebody's butt! I want it now! I got it!
I can taste it.
The devil's advocates may not agree on much, but funny is funny.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Hump Day Edition. I got a fine wingman. He's Code Devlin. He's John Nichols from The Nation. John, appreciate you sticking around. You know, I want to talk a little backyard politics for just a minute, John. We got a little challenge to the Trump-endorsed gubernatorial ballot, or at least the effort to qualify for the ballot from the rich guy from Connecticut, Tim Michaels. John, what do you think of the Democrats' efforts to, you know, kick him off the ballot for, you know, apparently not following the rules, for making a rookie error? It could be a very costly error, couldn't it, John?
Well, it could be, although, I mean, I actually think it makes Tim Michaels look good. And I'll tell you why. He put a Wisconsin address on there. You know, if he's screwing up on his address, it could well have been a Connecticut one.
Or a New York one.
So, or a New York one, or some, you know, wherever else he's got one of his many homes. And so, in that regard, you know, more power to Tim that he recognizes he is, in fact, running in the state of Wisconsin. Although, like all of Trump's choices, or most of them, he's somebody who doesn't come from the place that Trump wants to elect him. And we should always remember that. With that said, I have to be a little bit skeptical about this challenge. I think the Wisconsin Elections Commission is going to back up Tim Michaels on this one and let him be on the ballot, because the error is a technicality. It is listing your voting address, which makes sense to list when you're doing petitions, you're running for office, as opposed to his mailing address, that he lives in a village, you know, that's next to Heartland and listed one rather than the other. But it's the same street address, et cetera. And my sense is his lawyers will make the case that this is, you know, it's a legitimate small error and not one that should be disqualifying. And I happen to believe that in the state of Wisconsin, one of the best things about our state is that we have erred historically on the side of saying that if you make a legitimate effort, if you get your signatures, you probably have a place on the ballot. And one of the things I'll point out is that Republicans, as I understand it, are challenging Patty Shackner's petitions for her assembly race out in western Wisconsin for the same exact error, right? That, you know, she listed a voting address as opposed to a mailing address on the cover page of a petition. And so at the end of the day, well, again, I think Tim Michaels is a pretty comic figure. And, you know, it's certainly notable that he's not particularly familiar with his proper address. My bet is that he'll come out, you know, we will probably have a chance to vote for or against him come August and maybe even in November.
John, do you think Michaels' entree, or at least the Trump endorsement of Michaels, that's really shaken up that race, I suspect. And I wonder if Clayfish, who apparently has that, you know, that village, township, multiple address thing, she apparently got hers right, and she's been silent to date on this Michaels ballot issue. But you got to think she's kind of rooting against the guy right now, don't you, John?
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's the primary beneficiary of this if in fact, you were thrown off the ballot, right? That would be, you know, fantastic for Clayfish because she would end up in a situation where, you know, she might again emerge as the front runner, although I think she had problems with Kevin Nicholson as well. And so I'm not sure she wins even then. But, yeah, it would be tremendously beneficial to her, be a huge embarrassment to the Republican elites that have, to some extent, united around Michaels, and that's Trump and some of the other folks here in Wisconsin. But I will tell you this. Michaels, that was a rookie error, without a doubt, and maybe he would make more of them, but he's got a lot of money. He has an image that I think he is presented reasonably effectively. And so I do think he's probably the strongest Republican challenger to Tony Evers of the group.
No, I agree with you, John. And so, I certainly think
it's not just Clayfish that would benefit if he got knocked off the ballot. It's Evers would benefit as well.
Interesting take. John, we're going to have the Democratic Party chair, Ben Wickler, on tomorrow's big show, sort of a January 6th preview. John, how about the Senate race? Are you seeing anything new? I know Mandela Barnes is out with some ads now. I know the two other very wealthy participants, Godlewski and Lasry, have been up with ads. And I think Tom Nelson's been kind of clever, did a little polling joke earlier this week, you know, the outcome of the Nelson family picnics got him at 95%, John. So anyways, I know the campaigns are out there on the hustle. John, does any of it matter? Do people care during the summer primary season, or, you know, whoever's the front runner, are they the beneficiary of all the summer vacations?
Well, yeah. I mean, a little bit of summer vacation is a factor, but remember that the people who vote in the Democratic and Republican primaries, you're not going to have a lot of crossover this time because you got a good Republican primary for governor, you got a good Democratic primary for the Senate. So people are going to go into their primaries, and the highly engaged people in both parties, I think, are basically doing the same thing, which is looking for who is best positioned to win that critical race. And so Democrats, I think, no matter who's front runner in a particular poll, their first and essential question is who can beat Ron Johnson. And that means that any of the front runner, the four or so candidates who are in the lead or in higher level in the polling, any of them could, if they make the most effective case, end up taking off as a candidate. Similarly, on the Republican side, I think of the three significant candidates, any of them who can make the most effective case that they could beat Evers could take off. I say all that, long way of answering it, to a simple point, and that is that I think these races are still up for grabs.
You know, John Nichols, I heard you completely dismiss the candidacy of Tim Brantham. Kind of sad.
Tim, You know,
Big Liar Bust, baby.
I'm not the dismisser here. That's Donald Trump, man. Donald Trump, Ransom gave a lot of love, really kind of, you know, went for it. And what did he get out of his buddy Donald Trump? Nothing.
Well, you don't know, John. Maybe he took him furniture shopping. John Nichols, ooh, always appreciate when you come around, sir.
Nah, I guess I am here to hear these witticisms and insights from you, and I greatly appreciate it.
Take care, John. More Devil's Advocates.
All right, brother.
We'll be right back.
You can be my wingman anytime. You can be mine.
Yeah! I moved on her very heavily. In fact, I took her out furniture shopping.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Hump Day Edition. Where do you boys go during the interviews? I feel like you guys hide in the closet or something.
I'm sitting right here. I just try to not drag focus away from the interview. That's really all I do, because otherwise I'll be so interesting that you'll look at me instead.
Well, that could be. You know, you are damn sexy. And combined, you and Evan, oh, man, you would be entirely distracting. In retrospect, let me thank you both for being absent during the interviews. And let me thank the fine guest, John Nichols, always a great one, from The Nation. John Nichols, apparently giving lots of J6 commentary in the next couple days. And we'd love to hear your commentary right here on The Devil's Advocates at 844-967-2789. I think since Matt's been patient, we're going to the phones right away. Matt from Johnson's Creek, what do you got for us, sir?
Hey, so I had some thoughts what I'd like to see happen in the J6. I realize it's probably too late for this, but I think what the Democrats or the committee should have done is literally enlist, like, an author or a television producer, maybe a movie producer, you know, not Oliver Stone's a bad example because of his politics, but like an Oliver Stone level of somebody who can put a product together that will make the people understand, instead of, like, all due respect to Val Demings and Pete Buttigieg, and they're kind of wonky and they're great. They have great talking points, but I'm talking like, you don't think Trump got where he got by listening to everything Mark Burnett ever told him to do on The Apprentice. And he just bangs away and it doesn't matter what, it gets through. That's what I would have liked to have seen with this presentation that they're going forward with.
Man, what about sort of a Quentin Tarantino style presentation?
Well, I'm hoping eventually one day when, you know, if the movie comes out, that we do get like either a Scorsese take or possibly, I don't know, like a Mike Nichols or somebody doing a real good piece of history type of movie on this thing that is Oscar worthy. Because I think the conspiracy is wide ranging and it would be that, you know, All the President's Men part two, basically.
Well, you know, we get to live history in real time. Man, do you think it will be just the news junkies? Do you think others will join us? Well, man apparently had a pressing other affair.
I'm just picturing like us, like when we're older and we, you know, just sitting there watching an old Ken Burns documentary. January 6th. It was a day that started off differently, but then there were speeches. Beep, beep, boop, boop. Ken Burns, January 6th.
You know, my fear would be that James Santel would pull out his copy of the Mueller report and he just wouldn't live it down. You know, we could jail Trump. Trump, not me, you know, I have no part in this. The Department of Justice, maybe recommendations from the J6 committee lead to the imprisonment of the former president. You know, a boy can dream. But Jim Santel would still be a little bit bitter they didn't get him on the obstruction of justice in the Mueller report.
Followed up tonight by at 11 with James Santel, the Mueller report, unanswered questions.
You know, here... I know sometimes I humble brag going on to Fox News. Well, maybe it's not humble. Maybe it's just bragging. But I got invited back on Fox News. And, you know, as we've discussed prior, it's not because I seek the re-inviting. You know what I mean?
They called you.
They always do. You can't call Fox News and say, hey, can I be on the show tonight? Does Tucker need a second? Tucker rhymes with Tucker. Anyways, the painful part, and I don't know if Democrats think about this much, and our friends on the blue side, and even, you know, just reasonable nonpartisans. Fox News is blacking out the January 6th. They're going to pretend like this never happened. They've been doing that for a year or more, right? I mean, a couple of the fine journalists, and there were only a couple, and they're all gone. Think Chris Wallace. Think Sam Shepard. You know, they left Fox News in part over what the January 6th piece put on by Tucker Rhymes with Tucker. You know, the, oh, poor, what was it? I forget. Was it a false flag? Did he claim it was a false flag Antifa operation? It was some pretty big propaganda. Well, Greg Sargent at the Washington Post, I'm going to pull this a little closer. My aging eye is failing. Oh, one other thought. Peck Wrightlow filled in for me yesterday because, you know, sometimes you gotta do a little business, fancy Brian. And, you know, Pat did my business so I could do my business. So, anyways, thank you, Peck Wrightlow, and Dom and you guys for making him feel welcome. But I want to talk about the fact the January 6th is not going to be on Fox News. And whether or not you believe it, Democrats, that's kind of a big deal. The opinion, Greg Sargent, Fox News blackout of January 6th points to a hidden crisis for Democrats. Let me tell you about it. Not trying to make you scared, but, you know, here's the problem. The not-so-shocking revelation that Fox News will not carry the House committee hearings about the insurrection is yet another sign that right-wing media will go to extraordinary lengths to shield the GOP base from the brutal truths about the January 6, 2021. That partly reflects a serious political problem for Republicans. The hearings startling, The hearings starting Thursday will feature a documentary filmmaker who has a new video evidence of the violent mob assault incited by Donald Trump and extensive, they claim, Fancy Brian, advanced planning among paramilitary-type groups, riveting material about Trump's corruption and the GOP's enabling of it will follow. You know, it's a Wednesday, but I got Monday mouth. I'll keep trying. By contrast, Fox hosts are gearing up to substitute a propagandistic alternative story in which the only real victims related to January 6th in the hearings, why, they're Trump and his supporters. The poor victims, the poor snowflakes. House Republicans allied with Trump will manufacture material for this disinformation push designed to keep the truth from the base at all cost. Yet Fox's blackout also highlights severe information challenges that Democrats will face for the foreseeable future. The fact that Republicans enjoy a massive media apparatus that manufactures a separate reality for the base, even as Democrats rely on what? Traditional news organizations to communicate with voters, creates deep information asymmetrics that continue to bedevil them. I reached out to Dan Pfeiffer, the longtime communications advisor to former President Barack Obama, who experienced the evolution of this situation firsthand. Pfeiffer has a new book about the depths of this problem and how to counter it. A little bit, you know, from their back and forth. I'm going to read the questions and some of the answers, you know, because that's what I do sometimes. Greg Sargent, you write that Republicans have a massive propaganda apparatus on their side. Well, Democrats mostly get their information out to their voters via traditional news organizations that cover both sides of debates. You know, both sides do it fancy. The Fox blackout of the January 6th hearing is a case in point. Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity have already telegraphed that they're going to offer a completely contrary, fake, propagandistic, narrative in which the primary victims of the January 6th investigation are Trump and the Republicans. Here's what Pfeiffer said. If there is one last human being in Washington, D.C. who has clung to the idea that Fox is a center-right journalistic institution with the opinion at night, this should be the end of that. They're going to ensure that their audience not only doesn't see the hearings, but also gets conspiracy theories about what happened. So Sargent asked, the other side of this is that the right-wing media also exerts gravitational pull on mainstream media. Pfeiffer, when I worked at the White House,
this right-wing operation existed, but it was a fraction of the size. Our biggest concern was not what was on Fox. It was that Fox was helping dictate what the rest of the press was covering. We were living in a world where the pseudo-scandal du jour was infecting the larger media environment. Once Facebook reached a tipping point in 2014, this was now happening at hyperspeed at scale. Once again, little opinion piece. Well, I guess it's an interview piece. Greg Sargent, Washington Post. Going to have a little of my favored green jet fuel. Jeannie, I see you. Be patient just a little bit. I'll get to you at 844-967-2789. It's almost a deviously designed, self-reinforcing loop. Right-wing media and Republican politicians beat up on mainstream media for not covering the concerns of real Americans, as expressed through the right-wing media, which in turn leads major news organizations to say, we better pay closer attention to what's on Fox. That in turn allows right-wing disinformation to pollute the mainstream news information environment. Pfeiffer. That's been the goal since the 60s and 70s. It's a three-part process. One, sow distrust in the mainstream media among Republicans. Two is to create this media environment for those people where you now control what comes into their hermetically sealed information bubble. The third part is to influence the press. The late Fox executive Roger Ailes was a political ad maker. He made this insight that if Fox was a pseudo-news organization, it would have a greater influence on what other news organizations covered. So Sargent asked, Democrats seem complicit in this situation. They often refuse to adapt to the current information environment. Pfeiffer, absolutely. Sargent, when Republicans and right-wing media went all in on the message that Democrats were giving, real Americans, baby formula to migrants, it was a fact check into oblivion. But simply making a loud drumbeat communications to low information voters and to the base that something is wrong with the other party, that they're out to hurt you. The details are unimportant. Do Democrats understand this? Pfeiffer, political communication in social media age depend on getting people to pay attention to what you're saying. Fancy Brian, are you paying attention to what I'm saying right now? Are you? Pay attention. The right is very good at that. The left is not. Generationally, we have a party leadership that, for all its great attributes, came up in politics like three generations ago. A little bit more here. It's interesting that a younger Sargent, one more question. It's interesting that a younger generation of Democrats seems to get information landscape better. They get the need for noisemaking and big viral moments. Is it time for generational change in the party? If only because adapting to the new info wars is essential. Pfeiffer, absolutely. I'm not calling for a specific people to be ousted from leadership positions. I think we know who the leaders are, don't we? Crudy's just asking you. You know who the Democratic leaders are.
Yeah, but I also tell you, I don't miss Joe Crowley. Does anyone?
A little bit more. But as we're thinking about who's going to rise up in leadership, we need to elevate people who understand that getting your message heard in this media environment is essential. Speaking clearly, hopefully less so. 844-967-2789. Jeannie, welcome. What do you got?
Hi, I hope you guys are having a good day. You sound good today. I really believe that Fox News needs to be on its best behavior because these guys also should be indicted for aiding and abetting this crime. And by not showing this, they're aiding in a cover-up and to continue the big lie, which was a big deal in the whole start of this criminal activity. So they can do whatever they want, but all they're doing is making themselves look very guilty, trying to avoid what happened.
Jeannie, don't you think their guilt is what makes them look so guilty?
Oh, definitely. Well, they are guilty. I mean, come on. We all saw. We all heard. I mean, come on, right in front of our eyes. It's like, hey, you dumb, you know what? We're not foolish, and you guys should be held accountable.
hugely. So anyway, that's just my two cents.
Jeannie, quickly, in your part of the state, where are they going to get the information? I mean, we'll play it on the Devil Radio app, but how are they going to hear it in Eau Claire, in the Chippewa Valley? How are they going to hear about what happens tomorrow night?
Oh, I think they're going to be playing it live on our local stations, on the television stations.
Well, probably I'm on the television. Sure. Less convinced on the radio stations.
Locally. Oh, yeah. I don't know about our radio. I don't listen to radio. I don't listen to you guys.
Well, Jeannie, you have excellent taste. Come back. More Devil's Advocates.
What does the fox say?
Oh, I see nothing. I was not here. I did not even get up this morning.
We've included a Venn diagram.
You're listening to the radio show your mother warned you about, The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocate Radio Show, the Humpty Edition, the J6 Hearing Eve Edition. And we're going to do our little part, Fancy Brand, right here, Devil Radio, the Shaw. We're going to broadcast it live, baby. We're going to do it freaking live. We're going to broadcast the J6 Select Hearings beginning tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, preempting all other programming without commercial interruption. You know, I'll have to call John Nichols, see if he can do a little post-show commentary. Actually, probably the post-show commentary will come in real time from Rick Smith. Rick Smith, we play him out normally in that time slot. Whatever time is left will be assigned to our pal Rick Smith. But we're going to do it live. Evan's going to assist. And assuming all goes well, as long as it's not a big Mueller testimony-like dud, Fancy Brian, my intention, as you well know, is to broadcast the entirety of the J6 hearings live, baby, without commercial interruption. For you, our fair audience, want to get back to this piece, the Greg Sargent at the Washington Post. And it's starting from the premise that Fox News, they ain't covering the J6 hearings. So how does the left get the word out? Seriously, how do you get the word out? Well, here's what Pfeiffer, formerly of the Barack Obama White House, here's what he says. We have to build up the progressive megaphone. That means we need progressive funders to invest in progressive media. Just as the right-wing billionaires invest in right-wing media, we also need Democratic politicians to nurture the progressive media ecosystem in the same way that Trump and the Republicans have nurtured the right-wing media. We need to come up with a way to turn out millions of our... Let me try that again. Third time's the charm. We need to come up with a way to turn out our millions of incredible grassroots volunteers into messengers. We need to get them tools to communicate with the people in their networks. You know what they're talking about, man? Fancy Brian, you know where I'm going to go with this. Right here in the great state of Wisconsin, 81 right-wing talk radio outlets. And little old us, although we're growing, you know, keep an eye on us. We might grow. But we've grown from one little outlet, you know, one little AM to one little AM and an FM and another little, well, it's a pretty big AM, and the FM and the Shaw, you know, so we got Madison, we got Waukesha, and we got big parts of eastern Wisconsin. But what he is describing here is a network to match what it is they're doing over on the right. You know, on Fox News, sure, there's MSNBC. But if you have the ready ability to get on cable news, to get on the Washington Post, you don't know what's happening on right-wing talk radio, probably, because I assume you're not a consumer of that product. But I, Fancy Brian, you know I'll turn on right-wing talk radio. I do so with frequency. I monitor what they're saying. And it's beyond just telling their version of the truth. It is a whole different reality. I'm telling you, we let CJ in occasionally just to hear what they're telling their followers over there, what the lemmings are being fed. So I'm telling you, if you think it's the same, there's no sameness here. They're not
we
looking
never
for
present ourselves as a free and open forum.
Yeah. It's not a free and open forum. It's not fair and balanced. Fox News doesn't even make the claim anymore.
a little bit more from Sargent and Pfeiffer in their conversation. Would you envision the progressive media infrastructure kind of bludgeoning the mainstream media in a way designed to get them to stop both citing issues and echoing Republican disinformation? Is there some way to do that in an above board way that's more faithful to the truth and good discourse than Republican pressure on the media is? It's harder for two reasons. One, progressives consume traditional political media at a much higher rate than conservatives do. Second, when Democrats complain about the traditional media, the media pat themselves on the back and see it as proof of their objectivity. When Republicans complain, they have a meeting to figure out how to address the problem. But we have leverage here. The audience for most media outlets is overwhelmingly Democratic. There is a point where this becomes bad business for them. Sargent, it seems like the trick would be to somehow get the big news organizations to stop allowing their coverage to get polluted by right-wing bull blank. Pfeiffer, that's a very hard thing to do. It's going to require a lot of generational and cultural change at the top of major media outlets. The traditional way of doing political journalism is you cover both sides. You treat them essentially the same, but with different ideologies. When one party becomes a threat to things that a journalistic institution holds dear, truth, freedom of the press, democracy, if you covered them neutrally, you'd normalize and enable the things you worry so much about. So Sargent goes on to ask, there's a big debate inside the party about whether woke excess is in some fundamental sense harming the party's image of working class voters of all races. What's the right way to preserve the party's traditional support for minority rights while also repairing the party's image? Here's what Pfeiffer thinks. We can't repeat the mistakes of the 90s and go Republican light. The best thing for the party to do is to have a populist economic narrative, because that unites our base and divides theirs, while spending as much time and energy as we can branding the Republicans as extremists. Because of the overwhelming and understandable focus on Trump, we spent no time branding the Republican Party. They spent all their time branding us. What do they call us? Marxist, libtards. They call us lots of things. They call us the Devil's Advocates. You can call us 844-967-2789 like Wisco Paul did. Hey, Paul.
I've got doom and gloom.
I'm not doomy and gloomy. You're doomy and gloomy, Paul. Welcome. What do you got?
No, that's what you're talking about is one of the reasons the Democrats are having trouble breaking through and how they lost rural people in this state. So that's just my opinion. You're a step in the right direction, and you're not really left or right. You're like, you know, center left. But you try to tell the truth every day, and that's really awesome because you're the only radio station that anybody that's center, center left is God out there, Crudy. So keep up the good work.
I thought I was pulling you farther left all the time, Paul. Come left. Come to the blue side with me, Paul.
That's what I meant to say. I am.
You know, I'm over here from the Bernie-cratic wing of the Democratic Party, me personally. You know what? I'm also a small business owner. I'm also a father and a taxpayer. You know, I'm lots of different things. I'm a complex human being, like each and every one of us is. And, you know, I appreciate all of your inputs. And I especially like it when the happy hour starts and my little buddy Dominic joins us, and he's about to do so. So you fine, complex people, you stick around. We're going to tell the truth. We're going to have some fun. We might even crack a cold one because the happy hour starts right now. More Devils.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest the Democrats use it.
Congratulations for staying awake all day.